thank you so much for your flexibility. This is like crazy. Welcome to the 2018 4th of July in the Park meeting in a different place. My name's Arlene. I'm a compulsive overeater. Will those who wish, hi. Okay, we're starting. Will those who wish, please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Are there any other compulsive overeaters here beside myself? All right. The following is the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations, even though they offered to give us free coffee. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Who would like to read how it works? Morley. There we go.
Hi, my name is Morley. I am a compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. I turned it off probably by accident.
There you go.
Hello? Do you know how to use this? How to work
it's
it?
Working. You're doing it.
It's working?
Just speak more directly.
Okay, so, yeah, I can hear myself.
There you go. Good.
There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with food, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons. I didn't touch anything.
Not a good mic, maybe, of all the
8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the overeater, the chapter to the agnostics, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our overeating. And C, that God could and would if we were sought. So, yeah.
In honor of the 4th of July holiday, each speaker, we're going to have three speakers, and each will share their experience, strength, and hope that they have found through their reliance on a higher power and the program of Overeaters Anonymous. So we have 20 minutes for each speaker, 15 and 5. Did I ask somebody besides Ben to time? Okay, so he's timing. Carlo is our first speaker. Please welcome him.
Hi, my name is Carlo. Can I raise this a little bit? About the bass? How do I do it? Alright, you guys can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we can leave it. Don't mess around with it. Yes, humble. I need to be humble on my knees. Hi, you guys. My name is Carlo. Grateful to be here. Happy 4th of July. Thank you, Arlene, for asking me to be here. Yeah, it's a great honor. I came in 2003, and I was just getting my butt kicked pretty hard. It's a pretty simple, pretty standard story. Started compulsive eating really young, so it kind of became my first best friend. And the metaphor for kind of how it looked was, you know, pretty much the thing that I looked forward to most was food. And really what I remember most about being young was looking forward to events and things, not as much for the people, but it was more about the food. And it was very young, so I remember, like, all right, this birthday is coming up, so there's going to be, you know, all the special things and whatnot. And I just remember that. So, you know, as I got older, I didn't realize that as a kid, but as I got older, it became more clear. It's like, wow, you know, that became like my favorite thing. I was very uncomfortable in my skin. I'm learning now not to withhold my story. I have a pretty intense story. So it's like, that's what program shows me. It's like, I can use my experience to help others and not have shame. I'm not here to, you know, if I were here to, like, please people or look really good, this would probably be the wrong venue. So I like to share kind of, like, a lot of the intense stuff. So basically, you know, I came from an alcoholic family. I had some pretty serious birth problems, which I think contributed to, basically I was born with cerebral palsy. I had, like, lack of oxygen to the brain, was told I wouldn't walk and stuff. So I had a lot of crazy kind of neurological things going on as a kid and, learning disabilities. So that really, I think that contributed to, like, the discomfort in my body and the need to, like, feel better. I remember, like, socializing. I still feel awkward socializing sometimes, you know, so, like, that's just, like, the honesty. But one day at a time, like, things are pretty amazing. But, there's just, like, a lot of awkwardness, you know, and there was no one really to talk to about it. So food was, like, my friend, man, just, like, bring it on. And it's, like, very, very sedating. I won't even get into all the horror stories, but it pretty much ended up in I was in college, and there again, it was still like one of my favorite things. You know what I mean? Like I'd go home after the parties and just pound down like bags of cookies and like ice cream and stuff. So I just started realizing, okay, you know, this doesn't seem normal. And I tried to ask people like for help. I was always kind of thin. I ate pretty heavily, but I guess I have like some crazy metabolism or something like that. And I would kind of binge and fast for like long periods of time. So, you know, but yeah, I would get like zits and like puffy face, but I'd be like asking people for help. And they're like, God, like you're skinny. Like you don't need help. You know what I mean? Like you're good, you know, but eventually I realized this was a serious problem. So I did find a way and, you know, obviously realized my powerlessness and started to work the program, and it's really amazing. And I just like to reach out that it's like a, for me personally, it's like a food problem. You know what I mean? There's like a money problem. There's a money program. And it's a money problem. It's not always about like spending too much or spending too little or eating too much. I think OA has at this point become like for people dealing with eating disorders. So I've dealt with many facets of the eating disorder. At first, the most obvious was the overeating, and it was hideous. I couldn't stop, you know. But once I did get relief from that, I noticed I started to have issues with undereating and always wanting to like cleanse, you know, like all this crazy stuff. So it didn't stop for me once the overeating went down, and it's still one day at a time. So very powerless over this condition. You know, I got through, really when things started to change for me was when I got to the ninth step, you know, making my amends for the wreckage of the past. And, I was a pretty intense, you know, pretty intense guy. So I was causing a lot of wreckage. I was very mean. I don't know, I was just acting out. I wasn't always mean, but I was just like a troublemaker, you know what I mean? As a young guy, I was like stealing, I was a thief. So, I was using people. You know, I was kind of a player as well. So, you know, there's a lot of, which brings me to like self-centered condition, you know, and I think that's why, the ninth step's very important and all the steps in general, because it's not just, you know, it's, the big book states it pretty clear, and just, you know, all the literature states that we have like a very self-centered condition. So even when the food is down, there's this whole wild beast, to deal with of the ego. And, yeah, so once the food was down, I realized, okay, you know, just having a diet's not going to help. I did have to do, one more thing on the logistics of the program is like, I did have to like weigh and measure for like 7 years. I still pretty much do weigh and measure, but I can visualize things a little bit, still and not have a problem. But you know, it's like, there is some philosophy that people say, well, if you just work the steps, you'll have a spiritual awakening and you never have to, and you'll just know intuitively what to do. And I've seen that with a lot of people. That's true, but I've also seen with myself and other sponsees that like they've seen that in other people and hear like, oh, this person, you know, worked the steps and they had this huge spiritual awakening and they're able to eat whatever they want, you know, and but do it in like a manageable size or whatever. And I found that some people don't have that, so I think there's a lot of different experiences, and even people that do have a spiritual awakening still need to like structure their food, kind of weigh and measure it, or just have like a very committed approach, because really a lot of the powerlessness in the addiction for me is about thinking about it, about control. You know, one day at a time, I'm like, I get freedom from being a control freak because, you know, I can't control life. You know what I mean? And I can control my food, but it doesn't really have. Obviously, I'm sure we all know it doesn't have the best side effects. So. Yeah, that obsession that's in between the meals, you know what I mean? Like, I'm done eating, and then it's like back in the day, you know, just thinking, okay, well, you know, I'm done. Literally, I think most of my day used to be spent thinking about, okay, what do I want to have next? Oh, no, I don't really want to have that, but, oh, it would taste so, you know, whatever it is, or like, oh, I haven't been here for a while, I'll go there, and it's like, it's crazy. It's like a huge escape. And the crazy part about the mental obsession is thinking, like, after, you know, doing something 300 times, you know, ending up in my bed at the end of the night, like... All right, keep us on our toes. No control here. Yeah, just like the mental obsession after, you know, for me it was like just binging so hard that I could barely breathe, you know, like having weird heart palpitations, you know, and then doing that and then somehow thinking, you know, a day later, you know, 3 o'clock the next day that, oh, well, I can do this again or go eat there and it'll be okay. So the mental obsession is just nuts, you know, and I think that's a huge part of the problem is that mental obsession. And that's where, you know, realizing my powerlessness, turning it over one day at a time to program and getting out of myself, too. You know, I think a lot of this, the big change really happens, I think, for clearing up the past. I think for me, I'm a very sensitive person, and I think a lot of addicts are. You know, I think it's like a blessing that we have. It's like we're very sensitive. If we don't utilize it right, it can just kind of go down the wrong direction. So I'll just speak for myself. But, like, I could feel, you know, I think I had a lot of guilt for all the things that I did. And, you know, I'm not just the type of person that could just say, well, okay, well, I'm not doing that anymore. So I'm just going to leave that all and, like, move on. Which I think probably could work for some people, but I actually had to, you know, call it karma or whatever you want. I put a lot of negativity into the world, so I feel like, and I was so self-centered, everything was about me, that I felt like the program taught me to clear that up, and that really worked for me. It's like take it very seriously, the way that I treated people, the way that I used to act to the world. And change and make a living amends in the future, in the moment now, you know. And I'm not perfect, but I really, from where I used to be, it's really, really pretty brilliant. So that's what's cool about it is, and honestly, pain. I'm just gonna kind of freestyle this talk, but pain is still a good teacher. Because, you know, if I start to feel a little stressed out or whatnot, you know, I can feel it now and I can be, oh yeah, like, rather than like, oh, life is bad or whatever, it kind of comes in more like, oh, I'm trying to control things. I want things to be the way that I want. You know, I'm kind of, enforcing my will, which brings me back to step three is, turning over my will and my life. And, really what I'm getting, you know, what I'm learning more and more is, getting out of my will, getting into a higher power's will, you know, which is going to be, you know, step three, turning my will, my life over. It's really where things start to, really work out. Cause I think, my experience is when I'm in my will, there's like a lot of tension, you know, it's like, I can't force things to be the way that I want, or it's like I want to manipulate someone to like me or to get what I want. In my experience, part of the powerlessness outside of just the food is there's the in the big book it talks about the bedevilments, which is, you know, just like depression and you know, it's basically just the ways that life isn't really working out. And honestly, a lot of that is just, in my experience, is just from the anxiety and trying to make things work the way that I want. I'm trying to force people to give me what I want them to give me. So, yeah, that surrender is huge for eating, because if I'm in that surrender, I'm going to have less desire to, you know, want to eat something to comfort myself, to check out. You know, eating is a lot of checking out, a lot of isolation. I'm gonna be less inclined to want to isolate. And, yeah, I grew up in a pretty shame-based, household, and kind of even the area I grew up was pretty wealthy, even though my dad was just a hard-working electrician, but there was a lot of pressure to be like, it was weird. It was like kind of pressure to be perfect, you know, and, So I knew deep inside I wasn't perfect, and there was a lot of like this kind of outside, you know, this drive to kind of look good on the outside, which is another way I think the ism, the addiction ism shows up. And anyway, long story short is just working the four step with a sponsor, you know, these gracious sponsors that we have in this program that are willing to give so much time to us, seeing our character defects. Why do character defects matter? Call it character defense, defect, you know, whatever you want. It's just jargon. But seeing these things in us that are keeping us disconnected from the light of the spirit, from others, from being a service, from our joy, from who we are, but also keep us stuck in the food, you know, keep us stuck in this like empty. I mean, it's like the most empty solution there really is. It's like, I mean, white flour, it's like really, I mean, it's like dead, you know what I mean? It's like, you might as well be like, I don't know, like cocaine probably has more vibrancy than that white flour does. It's like death, you know what I mean? It's like, how can we kill ourselves the slowest and like become the most dull people we can, you know what I mean? So anyway, so, you know, it makes sense. That's why we do this work, you know, and I just support myself one day at a time and everyone else to remember that the reason we do this is, like, for good, you know, the goodness that can come from life. There's so many miracles that can happen. God, it's so gracious having someone else just sit there through the, you know, seeing the fears, the resentments. Just remember that everything comes, you know, comes back. It's higher power's world. This is like the natural world, you know. It's like we're just here. Everything is as it is. People are as they are. The world is as what it is. There's politics. There's all this stuff. So I just have to like deal with it. All I can do is deal with myself and, you know, so take responsibility for that and, be the person I want to be. So yeah, step 6 and 7, working on character defects, amazing. I think it's highly underrated. Once again, it helps with life, you know, working on the character defects helps with life, but it also helps with the food because that energy of, if those character defects get too strong and present, what's the exit route? Well, food, you know, or not eating, eating, binging, you know, over-exercising, whatever it might be. And so a little bit of how it's showing up for me now is, like I said, I was very shame-based, so I wanted to be, that's not who I am, it was just the way I was trained to survive, but I wanted to be what I thought was, you know, the cool thing to be, you know, maybe be more macho or, you know, be a hot shot in some way that my ego wanted. And, you know, I can still be a hot shot or whatever, but 5 minutes. Okay, great. But it's more of like the gifts that have been given to me. So right now, I'll give you one example. I just wrote an article for a newspaper. My health business is doing, I'm like a health coach. I do personal training, massage. I even deal with nutrition, which is kind of crazy being from this program, but actually it was one of the best trainings in like helping other people with that. But for me, I just want to be like the guy that does sports medicine and would come get buff and like do all this, you know, like this great thing. And I'd always hide like the spiritual aspect and I always hid my story, you know, I wasn't supposed to walk, you know, and I was super uncoordinated most of my life, had learning disabilities. So it was always kind of like, yeah, let me just show the good stuff. And, but my gift, I mean, I'm really good at that, but my gift is really like helping people like, that have limitations, like work through those limitations. You know what I mean? Like, you know, also like working through blocks in the body is one of my gifts because I was very blocked. I've sustained severe trauma in my life, physically, emotionally. I mean, I was sexually abused, verbally abused, like violently nonstop. I mean, I think that was probably the worst of all. Like pretty much every day of my life, just hammered. I mean, the fact that I have any self-confidence is like pretty amazing and it's growing and growing every day. So now like in this article, I just put it all out there. I'm like, hey, here's what I, you know, here's my story. And like, I can stand on my own 2 feet and like own that and be like, here's who I am. Like rather than, I'm going to be what I want my ego to look like. Well, here's what God created. God created this situation where I have these difficulties, and I'm pretty much 100% sure now that he created that situation so I could find a way to maybe not 100% heal everything, but like overcome it, thrive, and like help other people. So I had an opportunity where I could have just been like, okay, I'm just going to work with people that want to get buff and like look really good and celebrity clients and all this stuff, and like forget about anyone else that has an injury or like maybe has a disability, you know what I mean? And I think that's huge because for me, a lot of what kept me in the disease was denial and wanting to like gloss over the insecure parts, you know, like the small parts, the parts that are weak and scary. And honestly, I feel like if those don't get addressed, then I'm just kind of like not fully integrated. And the light, I believe the light, and I'm not all about light and dark anymore, because I always want to just be like the bright, the good, you know what I mean? And like, I find the bright and the goodness for me comes out more when I embrace like the pain that I've had, the insecurities, so I can be like, I can be full rather than like, okay, I got these things that I'm going to compartmentalize in here and then use all the rest. It's like going to integrate. And like, what I'm finding is the more that I, in that darkness, or what quote unquote darkness, is usually connected to character defects, some sort of compensation. So, anyway, and I think kept me isolated because I didn't want to see visible. So it's not about wearing everything on my shoulders, but like, my story is I went through this stuff, you know, and like, here I am, like, I'm strong, I'm doing well, you know, helping a lot of people. I still do have celebrity clients. I still do get people, like, I have pretty amazing before and after pictures with people, you know, but I'm out here living my life, and I'm piecing together all these different things that I've learned from program, and like, I'm owning it. I'm also a musician, I'm a rapper, you know, I'm a white rapper. I'm four years old. I think my, 41 years old. I think my new name's gonna be Graybeard. No, I'm just kidding. But it's cool, cause like, I'm not gonna stop rapping. And like, that's been one of the hardest things, is cause like, I feel like my communication got shut down, at a very early age. And I feel like that's gonna be the next level for me, is, then I gotta move into service. But, the next level is really just going to be owning my voice and like putting out my creativity. And I notice like, I'll put like 3 week periods and just be like on it and like start to get songs together. And something just happens where it's like, hopefully this will help someone, but like, it starts to get so good and so open, but then something happens where like, it just clamps down, and it's like this unreal, I can't even explain it, but it's like this unreal like oppression. And I never give up, but it comes back. I haven't been able to fully put myself out there in a genuine way, but I know it's going to happen. And I'm getting closer and closer, and I don't stop. It just feels amazing it's an amazing artistic process. And I've noticed sometimes like almost like bliss, like all this, man, that's it. So anyway, service is 10, 11, and 12 service, passing it forward. I do it. I try to do it all I do, and I'm not perfect. And I need it one day at a time. So thanks for letting me share. I appreciate it.
My doll. Okay. We now are going to have our wonderful second speaker, and that is Roberta.
Oh, yay. Woo! All right. Recovery.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to see you all. I've never spoken in front of a bleachers.
Okay, so I'm Roberta. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater.
Hi, Roberta.
And I've been in program 38 years, so I have a long story. So in my head, I thought, well, the first 5 years, I'll talk about what it was like, my first 40 years before program. My next 5 minutes, I'll talk about my first 22 years in program, where I had some recovery but a lot of relapse. The next 5 minutes, my 16 years since I surrendered and got spiritually awakened, and
the last 5 minutes, the last 3 months, where it's been a lot of challenges and just a lot of growth and attitude adjustments. So I'll start at the beginning. I think I was born a compulsive overeater. I lied about food at an early age. I said my sister ate the cupcake, not me. By eighth grade, I was 213 pounds. They took me to one of these McCreary or McCraw, what were they called? Anyway, they had machines that were going to take the weight off for you. You just had to stand there. And then I was always good at dieting, whatever the diet was, the grapefruit diet, the cabbage soup diet, the hard-boiled egg diet. One of the first dates with my husband, we were going to the Forest Hills, a tennis open was held there, and we were going to go there, and I spent like the first hour looking for a place to eat lunch, and all I could have was two hard-boiled eggs, and went from coffee shop searching out hard-boiled eggs. I mean, just craziness with sticking to a diet, losing weight, and then, hallelujah, now I can go back to eating whatever the hell I want. So that was my story. Became a Weight Watchers leader for a year or two until I started putting weight back on. Got humiliated trying to get a teaching job because you had to pass, in those days in New York City, you had to pass a physical, and I was too over, you know. I was 20 or 30 pounds overweight. It wasn't gross, but they told me I had to lose some weight, and anytime someone told me to lose weight or there was an event coming up to try to lose weight for, you know, that wasn't for me. Defiant to the core, like the big book says, you know. That's one of my defaults. I'm defiant, and I'm very selfish and self-centered. It took this program to show me that. So when I came into program, I was 240 pounds. I have some pictures going around because I love to look at pictures and to see what it was like and how I've changed. You can't see my attitude in those pictures, but I was not such a nice person, to say it mildly. I was cranky. I was hateful. I was, always full of remorse because I always wanted to stick to my new latest and greatest diet and then never could. So my dentist actually 12-stepped me, and he told me about Overeaters Anonymous. I had heard about it 5 years earlier in a consciousness-raising group, but then they went out to lunch together, and I thought, what kind of a diet group? They go out to lunch together. I didn't get the fellowship at all, because in Weight Watchers, like, everybody was just hiding what they did. It wasn't like a friendly, I want you to come along with me. Let's all get into the same boat and row together. We were all competitive. So this was a new concept, and I went to the meeting, and you told me it was a disease, and I was hooked. I loved that it wasn't my fault. It wasn't that I had no willpower, because I was so successful in other parts of my life and just could never keep the food down, and I blamed my overweight, my obesity, on not getting into sororities, on anything I didn't get, it's because I was too fat. I never looked at the other character defects that went along with the illness. It was just easier to go to the food than to look and to internalize and to try to figure out, you know, what I was stuffing down and how I was reacting to life. And in this program, I learned that whatever happens to you is going to happen, but I have a choice in how I react to it. And that is the big change that I've developed in program. So my first 22 years, I lost 100 pounds immediately. I became an OA star. And then I broke my abstinence. I had a pretty strict food plan. It wasn't gray sheet. It was called blue sheet. I think they allowed you a little fruit on it. But, you know, sugar had to be the fifth or less ingredient. I weighed and measured, and I did that for 18 months perfectly until, you know, I ate a little bit more one day and couldn't handle it. I was still in the punishing mentality. I was still beating myself up every time, you know, and that went on for 22 years. I would have a day, and then I would break it. I would have 3 weeks, and then I would break it. And always trying to get a stricter food plan. I tried Gray Sheet, a better sponsor, stricter sponsor, and nothing really cemented it in because I didn't have the spiritual component. And like some people say, there is no spiritual component. It is spiritual. But in those days, the God word did not sit well with me. I came in pretty much agnostic, and I didn't want to hear about God. You know, my grandparents had died, and so on and so forth. And just I had the Santa Claus idea of God, and I couldn't take that there's pain and suffering in this world. And I've grown up in these rooms. So the 22 years, I gained back 50 of the pounds, but I always was able to keep off 50 pounds. So I went to a lot of meetings. That was always a strength of mine, and I'm open-minded. I went to Recovery Anonymous. I went to a lot of OA meetings, Emotions Anonymous, worked through the steps, and made a lot of changes in my life. I went into therapy, and I got out of a marriage, and, you know, suffered the loss of my father and suffered the loss of my mother, and, you know, things happen. And for most of it, I was abstinent, and for much of it, I was in relapse. So that's what my next 22 years in program looked like. Sometimes I was just like shouting it from the mountains. I'd have a month or two and feel like, okay, this time I have it. And then before I knew it, I was shit-faced in the food again and beating myself up and couldn't understand how could I go back to it. How could I do that to myself after I knew that this was the answer? And in 2002, I had retired from teaching, and I was dragging myself out of bed. I thought life would be great in retirement, but I was like, oh, another day. And I realized that I didn't have that freedom from the bondage of food. The obsession was never removed. I was always, this morning's Voices of Recovery talked about being, do you want to be in the boxing ring and boxing, fighting with the food, or now I'm surfing with the food. And I love that analogy, you know, and so that's what happened in 2002. I was ready to go surfing. I spent enough time in the gutter. I spent enough time on the sidewalk. I wanted to go to the penthouse. So I realized that it's spiritual. And I said, I have to get a God of my understanding. That's what was lacking. Yes, I used the room as my higher power, but it wasn't clear to me. And I didn't live by thy will be done. It was still Roberta's will. And I still could manage it. And in a lot of the workshops I went to, I love the idea that we can't turn ourselves. We can't work step 6 and 7 and get rid of the character defects. We have to be turned. And I love that. You know, it's not up to me. I can be willing. I can bring the willingness to it. And, of course, I have to bring the action to it. I have to be willing to go to meetings and to work the tools. And I work with a lot of sponsees. I love it. It's my lifeblood. It keeps me so involved with program. I'm reading one book with several sponsees, another book with others, and so it just keeps me in the books, whether it's the big book or the OA 12 and 12 or some outside books that are program-oriented. They're all wonderful, and they all keep my head in a good place. It really does teach me to match calamity with serenity. So these last 16 years, so in 2002, I was recovering from shoulder surgery, and I had time on my hands. I was retired, I told you. And I started reading a book about your best self, and when did you feel that way? And I realized it was in 1980 when I was really so hot on program and so involved with it and knew that this was the answer. And then through the years, it kind of dulled because I didn't treat myself with love. And I realized that if I got a personal higher power, I was looking for a Jewish sponsor because I was Jewish, and I thought, well, that's what I need. And I was always looking for the answer outside. You know, I tried, well, maybe transcendental meditation. Maybe if I smoke pot. Okay, maybe if I get more religious, because my son had become Orthodox and was a rabbi now in Israel. And I was always looking for someone else's answer. And it just never rang true. And this Christian lady, just a wonderful person, taught me, take a blank piece of paper and start writing what your higher power is to you. And I started writing babies and nature and my higher self, and it's in me and it's around me and it's everything and it's all knowledge and all, whatever I wrote, and then that became my higher power, and I started connecting to it. She got me to start my day with meditation and prayer. And at that point, I was exercising. I said, no, I can't. I have to do my exercise, because I had never exercised. And then, thank God, I learned in this program that that's important. And I started doing that. But she got me to start the day with it. And sometimes my prayer and meditation is 5 minutes, and sometimes it's an hour. But it's consistent every day. Whether I'm home or somewhere else, I start with little prayers to God, and I brought my little God box, because through the years I've developed so many prayers from the books and from outside sources that I have so many pieces of paper with so many prayers that I made it into 7 days. So each day I do another pack of prayers and meditation, and then I've accumulated other things, and I have pictures and certain rocks in here that just are meaningful to me, and I'll hold them. And my meditation varies. Sometimes I do a guided meditation. Sometimes I just do a 5-minute app from the, you know, but it's always a connection. And through the years, I went to a spirit, all my Catholic friends had spiritual mentors, and they'd go to these nuns or people, and so there was someone, there was a Jewish woman who was a social worker who was studying to be a spiritual healer, and I used to go to her house once a month. She'd always say, bring God into it. What do you think God would have you do? And that became a part of my daily thing. What would God have me be? The big book says it, when you have fear, you know, not what you have to do, but how would you behave? What would God have me be? And so I was slowly turned toward loving myself. And, you know, the food, just the obsession was removed. I don't fight with the food. I do have days when I still go to the food, and this may be as good as it gets for me. And remember, this is just my experience, strength, and hope. But I don't have any red light foods anymore. Yes, if I go to potato chips or pretzels, or chocolate chip cookies, it could be a little bit of a problem for me. But they're not totally off my food plan, because if I'm in fit spiritual condition and emotionally grounded, and I just know intuitively that I'm not into the food, it's not like, oh, I must have that. And when I'm like that, I can indulge in some of these things. And, yes, yeah, sometimes if I'm feeling anxiety or loneliness and I'll be at home, I'll overeat. I'll go and I'll do something that doesn't make me feel good. But there are safe people in this program that I call that have the same experience, and they kind of talk me down and, okay, so it's an hour, so it's 20 minutes. So it's not a perfect calm. It's not perfectly calm with food, but for the most part, when I go into the diners or, you know, I don't see the cakes and the displays, and when I'm in CVS, I'm not looking to run to the candy aisle anymore. So it's been a miracle, because that obsession is removed. My food is in its place. I was willing 16 years ago to start writing down my food. That has always been helpful for me. When I first came to program, I would write my food and give it away. And so I wrote it down. I didn't particularly give it away, but I had my intention of what I was going to eat, and nothing was verbatim, and it just seemed to take me to a good place. So my food was in order. My relationship started getting better. Thank you. Is that 5 minutes? Thank you. So my relationship started getting better, and I have great relationships with my children and my husband. That's still my most challenging relationship, you know, because if I bring my expectations, it's always going to be a disaster. So I had a sponsor who said, low expectations, high hopes. And I really try to remember that. And so I work the steps. I've always done thorough fourth steps, fifth steps, or do 10 steps. As things come up, I can say I'm sorry. I've learned that I don't have to be perfect. I'm human. It's okay to make mistakes. And I want to talk particularly about the last 3 months, because that has really been a challenge for me. I woke up March 30th, which was Good Friday, and the Passover night was going to be that Friday night, with the most horrendous stomach ache. And as it turned out, I had to go to the emergency room, and I needed surgery. I had a ruptured ulcer in my stomach. Now, this is coming from someone who always said, I have a cast iron stomach. I can eat anything. I can, you know, never paid that close attention to what I was doing. And I was on a pain medication for my knee for many years. And I don't want to badmouth the medication, but that kind of thing that has ibuprofen in it, plus my occasional Advils, I believe is what caused the ulcer. And the doctors believe that too. So I had emergency surgery. I couldn't believe it, but they had a tube in my nose. I couldn't eat or drink for 5 days. And that's a compulsive eater. And it took me to another level of surrender. First of all, I saw the body can do it. The body has to do it if it has to do it. And it's all about my attitude. I just became fully more surrendered. Every bad thing that happens to me takes me down another level of surrender and makes me more humble. So after a week in the hospital, it was quite a long recovery. You know, from pain meds, I started getting constipated, and then it turns to diarrhea, and it was like horrendous. And I was finally finished with it. I went for a colonoscopy. I went for endoscopy June 8th. I got a clean bill of health. June 10th, I was walking in Larchmont with my daughter. I tripped on the sidewalk, fell down, and broke my kneecap. So for the last 3 weeks, I've been in a full body brace. I got it lifted yesterday, so it's like another freedom, thank God. And but my attitude, oh, sorry, I did something.
It's okay.
I'm good. Yeah, thank you. But my attitude is always, you know, what can I learn from this? And I have a 21-year-old grandson who lives in Israel, and he had danced when he was 19 and twisted his knee, and he had the same, even a worse injury. And I said to him, Shopsy, what did you learn from it? He said, it made me realize I shouldn't drink so much when I'm at a party and lose sight of everything. And it made me more grown up because I had to call doctors and go to physical therapy. And, you know, if a 21-year-old has such a wonderful attitude and his reliance is always on God, if my reliance is on God, I can have that same attitude and see, what am I going to learn from this? And so here I am. I get the brace off. And then in the interim, I've had some other testing because I wanted to go off cholesterol medication. And last night, the doctor calls me back. It's like one of those dolls, you know, you hit it down and then it comes up and then it hit again. And I expected him to say, oh, the CAT scan of your arteries went fine and no buildup of plaque. Well, it wasn't that way. So there's a buildup, and I'm 291 on the scale. It's in the third category, and I want you to go for 3 more tests. And, oh, well, first of all, I don't have to go to doom and gloom, and I'm going to die from a heart attack. So I can just catch my breath and know this is my next challenge. And if I keep my head in fit spiritual condition by talking to all of you, by doing a lot of service, service has kept me going. I was of service on the East Coast. I was able to let go of my house when it flooded from Hurricane Sandy because I knew I'd have support on the West Coast. I joined the board. It was the best thing I ever did. I got to meet so many people, and I have so many friends and acquaintances that are willing to take me to meetings and bring the meeting to my house. And I mean, this is the most wonderful organization in the world. We are loving, we support each other, and I don't know where I would be without it. It has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I'm of service not only in our community, but to my family, and I'm forever grateful. Thank you.
This on me?
Hooray!
Hey! Hooray. What up? Hooray, Composo Reader. Hooray. Let me take a little sip because my throat is parched. It's okay. It's okay. We're going to, let me get real intimate here. All right, here we go, right in your face. I was collecting a bunch of ideas for this talk before I came out. And now after two speakers, I'm kind of in 20 minutes of announcements. I'm kind of like zapping energy. So I don't know what I'm going to talk about. In 2 weeks, it will be 2 years of food sobriety. And yeah. Yeah, the 14th of July is Bastille Day, and that's when I got my independence, and that's when I had a revolutionary change in thinking. And but you know, I count this day as like kind of my day one. I was in a dark hole, and I couldn't get out of it. And somebody texted me. She's not here today, but she texted me. Why didn't you go to 4th of July in the park? I was the biggest that I have ever been. I've been in relapse for years. Even, you know, like, this was the last thing that I wanted to do. Coming back to OA was the last thing that I wanted to do. And this is after I had been in treatment for a year for, you know, the eating disorder. I didn't want any parts of coming back to OA. But in that moment, when I texted her, I was desperate. I was desperate. And I knew that I needed to come back. I needed to come back. Like, this was the only place, like, that I knew where something had happened in prior years. And I texted her, and I came. And I didn't have any shame. I didn't have any shame. I felt relief. Because in that moment, I got a moment where I was free from the thinking, you know, and I was open to whatever my experience was with coming back. And no, I wasn't thinking like, you know what, I want to come back and be absent again. I didn't think about any of that. I just wanted to show up again. And that was my prayer. God, please help me show up. And I showed up. You know, and you like, that's why in my other shares, you hear me, like, I talk about this is precious what I have. Like, this is precious. Like, the gift of being able to be sober with food, number one, is a gift. I took it for granted before. I really did take it for granted. Like, I didn't fully understand that if I go back out, if I get into binging again, I may not come back again. That's my experience. It took getting up to 485 pounds. 485 pounds. It took a lot for me to come back. A lot of pain. And I still didn't want to come back. I still didn't want to come back. So, you know, I respect the power of what I'm dealing with now. I respect it fully. And I also respect the miracle that happened to me. And Jack Saul, in his shares, he always says this Hebrew line. It's just like the miracle happened here or something like that. Can anybody speak Hebrew? There we go. Now, I don't have the ability to do that. So, I can't do that, but that's it right there. Look, I love the Jews. I went to Brentwood Elementary, and That's when it started, my boy Sharon. I was doing the dreidel, made it out of clay. Oh, Hanukkah, come light the menorah. I was doing all that. So, yeah, the miracle happened here, right? All right, so that's the fun and games of it, right? Let's get into some serious work here. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some point in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So, I've, like, you know, for the most part, I've been given the freedom of the obsession, right? Like, I don't really think about food. It, like, I don't really have that issue. Like, I follow my food plan, and I do my deal, right? But what's gotten me back to step one in realizing powerlessness and the unmanageability is when I, like, right now, I'm just completed, like, 6 and 7, and, like, the defects of character has brought me back to step one. Just like with the compulsive overeating, the level of powerlessness that I have when it comes to eating, I have that same level of powerlessness when it comes to changing me and being a different person and, not living in these defects of character. When it talks about selfishness and self-centeredness, like, that's number one for me. Me thinking about me, right? When it talks about quit playing God in the third step, what we're talking about is Ore getting out the way. I can no longer just make up the decisions and say, okay, this is the way my life is going to be. This is what I'm going to strive for. Like, I can't do that. I can't live like that anymore. That's what got me, that type of thinking is what got me to 484 pounds and miserable. My boy Carlo talked about the bedevilments. That's on page 52. And it talks about having trouble forming relationships. It talks about we're a prey to misery and depression. This is how I am in my self-centeredness. How does that relate to food? Well, I create this narrative. I spin up narratives about everything, right? And the problem with my narrative is it creates disturbance. It creates distress, emotional instability, emotional disturbance, right? And I want to seek relief. For a long time, I thought the issue was the food. But that's not the issue. That's the symptom of what I'm dealing with. That's the way I seek relief. That's the way I take the edge off. Like, I have a high-powered mind, and it doesn't stop working. It spins up narratives about everything, and it wants to create disturbance about everything. Like, somebody's on their phone right now while I'm talking, right? What's the narrative? Just instantly in that moment, the narrative is, oh, they're not listening to me. I'm a piece of shit. Nothing I have to say is important. Then, you know, this emotional disturbance happens. What do I do with that? I can go over and slap the phone out of that person's hand. The fucking phone out your hand. But then he or she wants to retaliate, right? I step on the toes of my fellows. That's just a minor example, and that's a little bit of levity. But yeah, I did kind of feel that tinge. Oh, you know. Now, that's just one example. Like, in a life, though, in a day, I can have a lot of experiences like that to start to collect and build over time. And then by the end of the day, I want to take comfort. I want to get my comfort. What better way to get comfort than a cheesecake? And by the way, me and Carlo's album will be called Chocolate and Cheesecake. And cocaine. Look, I was thinking this morning, because I was in, like, you know, I was thinking this morning, how am I going to do this? And I got this image, like, if I came up to the mic and I said, do you want recovery? Everybody says, yeah! And this is like, when do we want it? Now! How do we get it? The steps! Like, you know, like, I got this image that just, like, totally just relieved me of, like, this the burden of speaking, right? Just want to have some fun up here.
I'm listening to you.
So, getting back to the selfishness and self-centeredness, I'll give you another example of how I actively work through that, and we're going to go through this four-step process. So, like, the first miracle this morning was that I got up and I didn't feel the overwhelming desire to go get two breakfast burritos from, you know, the place that sells the biggest breakfast burritos in the hood, right? That was, like, the number one, like, the first miracle. And I wanted to, you know, I didn't have that overwhelming desire. The second miracle is that I listened to my phone meeting this morning. I wanted to get good and right. Shout out to Vision for you, for any people who listen to that. The second miracle is I start to read on step 7 and do my step 7 work. Well, actually, in the big book, step 7 doesn't really have any action, like action steps, but, well, outside of prayer, but I am going through a process, like a formal process of doing work and bringing it into my consciousness. The next miracle is that, you know, I got up and I was like, okay, you know what, let me reach out. One of my boys from Arizona flew in. We worked that out. I wasn't able to pick him up just because of time constraint, but I was willing to, like, get out of myself. Like, that's a miracle for me, because for me, it's like 24-hour me. And just for me to be willing and want to be able to help somebody else and be considerate, it's like, that's a new phenomenon for me, right? Like, being of service. How can I contribute now? God, where do you want me to be? That's a miracle. That's a revolutionary change in my thinking. Because it's been all about me, right? You're not behaving the way I want you to. Life has dealt me a bad hand. Life is not giving me this, or, you know, it's like, I don't want to be that guy anymore. The next miracle is that when I got ready, I got dressed, you know, put on my Sunday's best, and got in my car, and I didn't count the cars in front of my house, because my neighbors, like, they're a big family, and I didn't, like, for the last couple of weeks, every morning I go out and I count their cars. Oh, you're in front of that person's spot, you're in front of that person's house, you're in front of my house. I didn't do that today. The next miracle was one of my neighbors and their extended family was outside. And I actually smiled at them and said, hey, and acknowledged them. That's a miracle, too. Instead of, you know, these motherfuckers in the you know, like, being in that place. That was a miracle. Because 3 days prior to that, I was really ready to, you know, slash their tires and throw a brick through their windows and, you know, teach them a lesson. Because within that, it may seem like something minute, right? But really, like, when we dive into that resentment, that those people aren't behaving the way that I want them to. They're not living to my rule set, right? Or it has certain rules. And, you know, if you're not aligning yourself to my script, if you're not playing by my script, I get pissed. This is how people should behave. Listen to that thinking. This is how they should be. And I get mad. And then there's the piece of superiority. I'm a, you know, they're second generation blah, blah, blah immigrants. I'm an American. You know, that kind of superiority kicks in. Then there's the fear that somehow them parking in front of my spot is them basically saying, fuck you, we don't care about you. And I have a big fear of not being acknowledged or respected. Right? And then the dishonesty or the delusion. Like, let's get into the dishonesty and delusion. Like, what lie am I telling myself? This has nothing to do with me. It's not an attack on me personally. Another delusional, like, wanting more than my fair share, right? I have a parking space I'm taken care of. Why am I worrying about that parking space? There's no assigned parking on the street. The street doesn't belong to me. fucking doesn't belong to me, but I sure do think it's a little girl in the audience. I'm cussing.
No, everything you're saying, she's relating it right now. She elbowed me because I say the same thing a lot.
Okay.
Also, she said that this morning driving over
yeah.
here.
So she knows you're crazy.
Yeah.
All right. You know, while we're I want to read this too. This is really fascinating to me. The definition of sanity, the ability to think and behave in a normal, rational manner, sound mental health. So, me walking out in the morning, like before work, and counting their cars. Me wanting to call the city and report that they have an illegal dwelling in the back. Me wanting to go across the street and talk to my neighbors and, you know, rebel rouse and rouse. Yeah, aren't you offended? Yeah, you're offended? Like, I'm offended. Well, we need to all do, yeah. Right? Is that sanity? And that's why I said it was a miracle that I get up and I didn't do that.
Yeah.
And look, let's not, you know. Yeah, all right. It sounds all good and. You know, it sounds great, right? You know, this stuff is sounding awesome. But the reality is, the reason I do this is why. Why? Somebody answer that question. Why do I do this work? Why do I have to go through this process? Why do I do my nightly reviews where I have to examine all this and look at this? Why?
Because you're crazy.
But more importantly to me, you get an A for effort. Because if I don't do the work, I'm going to be the 484-pound guy again.
Yep.
That's real simple.
Yep.
Yeah, so I can sound good up here, and I can tell, you know, oh, God. But at the end of the day, Carlo talked about it. He alluded to it. I do this because I don't want to overeat. I don't want to go back to that life anymore. And yes, full flight from reality. Crazy. And, you know, that's one thing that treatment really helped me in understand, is that I have a mental illness. How else do you explain somebody destroying their lives so they can get that next cookie? Like, how do you explain that? And I was also, in therapy, they have you do an addiction model, a tree, and you track back, you know, addiction through. Another thing that I've noticed is the ways of thinking are hereditary. These defective ways of thinking have been passed down from generation to generation. I was visiting my father with my sister, I think it was a week ago, and just listening to him talk, it was like, oh, I accepted what these thoughts, these thinking patterns as gospel. But guess what? Those are no longer serving me. The ways that I've thought are no longer serve me. That guy that wants to throw a brick through somebody's window because they parked in front of my spot, that's not serving me. The guy that wants to walk into work and alienate everybody around me because I'm hurting, that's not effective. That's not an effective way to live. Part of my amends to my job now is I actually go in and I'm happy. I spread cheer. Who the fuck is that guy? You know, like, I like to walk in and, you know what? I'm not going to acknowledge you. I want you to know who I am. I don't have to talk to you. What? That's what I needed. That's how I had to live. Now I realize that I'm built for connection. Everything about me, if God was an assembler, he built me for connection. He built me for that. All the gifts that I have, I'm built to be a part of the crowd. I'm built to connect to people and talk to people and connect with people and love people. And so right now, my mission is just to grow in effectiveness and to grow in that path. I go in and spread that cheer. Even if I don't feel like it, I spread that cheer. That's part of my amends, changing my behavior. And when I slip up, when I don't achieve that goal, God, please help me be different. Because no amount of me is going to solve this issue. No amount of me is going to solve this issue. I need God. I need you all. It takes a village to raise Ori. So you know what? I just ran out of gas. I felt it. It was just like, you're done. How many more minutes do I have? I want to take this last 2 minutes to be controlling. Yeah. Right? Just, but indulge my ego for a little bit here. Let's all just close our eyes for a little bit. If you want to participate, you can. If you want to be on your phone, you can. Whatever you're doing. And let's just take a breath. Let's release it. Let's do one more. And release it. That's a really important tool for me. When that person is walking down the hall that I think is annoying, I don't really particularly like his personality, and I want him to behave the way I think he should, I have to take that breath. God, help me be a different way. Help me be a different way, because I, like, really, down at the core of this, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be free. Free enough to be vulnerable. Free enough to connect with others. Free enough to transmit love and receive love. Free enough to be tolerant of others, because I don't have to. I don't have to change you anymore. In that breath, they talk about it. We stop, we pause, and we say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that, you know. That's what this life has given me. Thank you. Yeah.